on that Piper.
One show gives you the information that can change and shape your life. The IMA Doctors. Get straight talk and honest answers to your healthcare questions from the team of doctors at IMA Healthcare.
We're ready for your questions. 237-5948, 800-880-5346, or you can text in to 35270. That is sponsored by 702 Communications. It is the IMA Doctor Show. Today we have Dr. Jennifer Jones-Dees and nurse practitioner Dr. Jessica Kuhn, a board-certified pediatric nurse practitioner, with us. If you haven't heard, they recently launched a pediatric and adolescent medicine practice at IMA Healthcare. This is something that people have been begging for, myself included. And just in case you were not listening during our last show, you can go and listen to it at KFGO.com. I'll introduce you again. Dr. Jennifer Jones-Dees is a board-certified pediatrician who provides care for children from birth to age 21. She specializes in ADHD behavioral medicine, asthma and allergy care, and endocrinology. And joining her today is Dr. Jessica Kuhn as well, a board-certified pediatric nurse practitioner. She provides primary care to children and adolescents from birth to age 21. She also has an interest in children with special health care needs, neonatal care, and bowel and bladder problems. Welcome back, ladies. Oh.
It's great to be back.
It's good to have you here with us.
How have things been going since you were on the show in April? I imagine you're settled in and keeping pretty busy.
Yeah, we're really enjoying it here and are super glad to be a part of the IMA Healthcare team. Wrinkles have been ironed out, and we are seeing kids and really enjoying the practice here. We've had a lot of time to get back together with some of our old families and meet some new families and discuss concerns related to the strange environment that we're in right now with COVID and all kinds of good things. So, we're ready to see kids again.
So with the COVID situation continuing, are you seeing that patients are still concerned about bringing their children into the clinic? And what advice do you have for those parents?
Yeah, definitely parents are still concerned. However, we have some great protocols in place here at IMA to keep kids and their families safe. So we do require that everyone who comes into the clinic is masking while they're in the building. And we bring families back to the exam rooms as soon as they're checked in so that they can avoid any wait time.
Is it okay to put off immunizations and yearly checks?
So the short answer to that is no, we don't suggest that at all. The American Academy of Pediatrics, who is kind of the big top pediatrician gurus, have released a statement suggesting that children should be brought in for their normal care, and especially if they're requiring vaccinations, they should be seen and vaccinated as soon as possible. Additionally, the American Academy of Pediatrics recently released a statement about children returning to school and are really encouraging that kids go back to school.
Okay, so we've got some soon-to-be moms out there, I'm sure, that are looking for a provider for their new baby. This is something that I dropped the ball on. I didn't even think of it until after my baby was born and was like, oh no, I need to find a pediatrician. Okay. What advice do you have for them before they give birth? And can they come and meet you before they have their baby?
Of course they can. And we actually have appointments set up for parents that have questions before they deliver. And, you know, that's not a necessity, but if it helps ease fears about what's going to happen at delivery or after delivery, we're certainly happy to help with that. With regards to what advice can we give them, start preparing for some things that you'll need to make decisions on. For example, if I have a boy, am I going to circumcise my boy or would I rather leave him uncircumcised? What kind of a provider style do I like? Do I like someone that has the ability to communicate with me really well and gets to know me, or am I more of a person that I just need to get in, and do the medical stuff and I don't really need to develop a relationship? We highly recommend both Jess and I to stick with a what's called a primary care provider, because that person gets to know your family and children, and that makes the care that we can give that much better. better because we're on the same page, if you will, with all of the things that we do with families and parenting and discussion of vaccines and procedures. And so it makes a big difference if parents are willing to take the time to get to know providers and discuss some of those things with them.
I know you each have some areas of specialty you work in, and I want to give you a chance to talk about those, and maybe it'll inspire some of you who have questions out there to call or text in about these specialty areas. Dr. Jones-Dees, let's start with you.
Sure. Both Jess and I, you know, we practice general pediatric medicine, but every provider out there has a few little things that we really enjoy doing and taking care of, and have kind of what we kind of sort of subspecialize into some of that. And so we will see kids with these different problems. And the ones that I really like to take care of are asthma and allergy care, which is a big deal at this point in time, especially summer with seasonal allergies and things. I do like endocrinology, which is the study of the body's hormones, meaning issues with things like diabetes that have insulin problems or thyroid troubles where the thyroid gland can be either over or underactive. And then I do a lot of care with families with regards to parenting, behavioral medicine, and as the kids get older, you know, we're monitoring for things at the school age level, like attention deficit, dyslexia, some of those learning problems that can really make school and transition difficult for kids. And the earlier that we're working together to get the kids ready for school and prepare them for school, the better they're going to be. And that's ultimately our goal, is to really get these kids to be as successful as they possibly can be.
And for you, Jessica, what are some of your areas of specialty?
So Jennifer hit that one right on the head. We really do treat, we do general pediatrics. And so both of us like to work together with the families and treat for general peds. But both of us do have some special interests in areas. And for myself, my special interests include the ADHD and behavioral medicine. And again, working with the family as a team and getting them linked in with other providers if needed. For example, occupational therapy, physical therapy, psychology, and such. I also enjoy working with families who have children with special healthcare needs. And whatever those special healthcare needs may be, it takes a little bit of extra sensitivity with those families. And again, working as a team, because clearly there's many players often with these children. The other thing that I really enjoy caring for are children who have bowel or bladder problems. And again, we really take a team approach. So the family ultimately is the decision maker, but we like to all work together and work as a team so that everybody can play together, play nicely in the sandbox, if you will.
Summertime is the perfect time to get those kiddos in for a checkup, whether it's for preschool or elementary. Maybe it's that much needed sports physical. Can you also do those kinds of things?
You bet we can. And the Academy of Pediatrics, which is the organization that Jess referred to before, who kind of leads all of the guidance for the care and welfare of children, does recommend that all children get seen annually for a wellness checkup. What we are discovering with those kids that aren't getting it is there are some things that get missed, vaccines that aren't up to date, different stress issues and mental health issues that maybe get left a little long before they get taken care of, and some overall just family concerns. How do I parent this particular scenario, or what do I do to talk to my young child who's starting to tell me that there's some bullying going on in the classroom, or how do I treat my next door neighbor who has a child with a severe health condition? And so those are all things that we help guide parents with. Not to mention, we talk about very, very basic stuff like, what should you feed your child? How do you get a child to eat that doesn't want to eat Brussels sprouts or broccoli or, you know, some of those hard foods that we sometimes struggle with. We have a lot of fun and interesting discussion daily with our families.
So what about those summertime specific health concerns? Ticks, stings, sunburns, ear trouble. What are you seeing this summer? And if we've got some parents out there listening and they're worried, can they call you for some urgent care needs?
That's a great question, and we really have been seeing all of those things. So some of the more common ones are definitely the bug bites, sunburn comes up, and ear problems. Ideally, we like to treat preventatively, so talk to our families about how to avoid those problems, but those are all things we've been seeing in the office. And of course, they can call anytime if they have concerns. Also, we offer same-day appointments Monday through Friday for urgent concerns or ill visits.
Okay, we're going to take your questions now. We're going to go to the text club at 35270. You can also email us, kfgo.studio@kfgo.com, or you can give us a call, 237-5948. This is, the first question is just to be expected. It's what I thought it was going to be, ladies. Going into cold and flu season, what is the best way to determine if you should send your child to school or daycare? I don't want to be an irresponsible parent, but I also feel like a runny nose and a slight cough is normal for little kids who lick all the same toys. I struggle with the COVID symptoms, but I also take it all very seriously, just trying to figure out how to navigate this crazy health pandemic and also try to be a responsible parent. Any suggestions are much appreciated. I did reach out, this person says, I did reach out to my kid's pediatrician too, and we have some guidelines from his school. Two symptoms, we stay home according to the North Dakota Health Department, but if that's the case, my kid will be home all allergy season and winter. Thank you.
Yeah, that makes it really hard. The bottom line is if your child is having a fever, and in the medical world, we consider a fever anything higher than 100.4, not 104, but 100.4. And when your child is fevering, they're much more likely to increase spread of infection. And so really, it's important to keep your child home with fever and not give them Tylenol so they get through the door of the school or the daycare and then start to fever while they're there during the day. Other big things that are important for cold and flu season are, how is your child looking? Are they eating well, or do they just need to have a little TLC? Do they need to snuggle on the couch rather than going to daycare? It's kind of your mommy instinct or your daddy instinct, that knee jerk that says, I don't know if they look that well today. And if you're having that second thought, it is more likely that the child will do better with care from their parents in the walls of their own home.
Okay. It is a scary, confusing time. So I'm sure that those are questions that you're getting a lot of.
Absolutely.
Let's get to the phone lines. Paul, you're on. Go ahead.
Yeah. Good afternoon, doctors. Hi, Jennifer. We went to school together many, many years ago.
A little reunion.
Woohoo! Go Bears.
Yeah, back in the old Montevideo days. Question. I have a 2-year-old, and she came down with a little rash, like an infection type of thing, and it started popping up all over. We took her into the day, and their initial thought was a staph infection, so they gave us some antibiotics and some ointment to put on it, and it started clearing up. Then they called us today and said, no, it's not a staph infection. Stop the antibiotics. Well, I started thinking back to the 4th of July weekend. We were swimming out in a lake where they come out and said there was swimmer's itch in the water. Mm-hmm. We've been out there all day. Could that be swimmer's itch? Because it's like also just sort of showing up in these splotches, and some of them were leaking, and were getting kind of bad. It's just, they would just pop up randomly all over the body.
Swimmer's itch tends to show up pretty quickly after exposure. It's little larvae that are in some of the animals that live in the lake's poop, which is gross, and they bury into your skin. And so we usually see symptoms from swimmer's itch within 24 hours. So with the story you shared, less likely that it was the swimmer's itch that got them. However, an interesting phenomenon that happens with kids that are playing in their swimming suits and in water and toddling around and being wet all day is the warmth of the wet material and the wetness allows the pores underneath those items to dilate. And then if we have any of our normal skin bacteria that are ripe and ready to crawl into those dilated pores, they can develop develop a little condition called folliculitis, which, you know, it's not super serious, but sometimes does need to be treated with topical antibiotics. And depending on, you know, how severe it gets, if there's, you know, big weeping blisters that you, it sounded like maybe you had something that was weeping on your child. Those sometimes we do need to use an oral antibiotic, but for the most part, good bathing, sometimes even throwing a little, we do some things in the pediatric world called bleach baths for kids that have skin infections, where you just fill your tub halfway with water and then about a quarter of a cup of household bleach, mix it in with the water, and it's that bleach will cut down on some of that normal skin flora that tends to be hyperactive in those states and cause those lesions.
Okay, because I think the ointment that he was called was a miroprostin or something like that, and an oral antibiotic. And they just called my wife and said, stop taking the antibiotic, but keep using the cream, because it was making it better. So
sure.
Hopefully it's something not serious. It's kind of started thinking about the water, the swimmers, because nobody else had to, you know, because as soon as they got out of the water, they were putting signs up around the lake and were out there all day going, oh, there's a sign today. We got a lake, like, oh, great. That's what the signs say.
Yeah.
Okay.
A little trick for that, just if you ever do see that again, using an oilier sunscreen on your kids when you're in the lakes that have those, and then an immediate wash off when you get out of the lake, because it takes time for those little larvae to burrow into the skin. And so if you create the barrier with an oilier sunscreen or even a topical baby oil or something, and then get a good soapy water wash, you know, right after getting out of a lake, that can really help prevent that type of an infection.
And really drying your skin, right? I mean, like vigorously drying your skin after you wash off when you get out, is that
yes.
right?
Yeah. Yep. You kind of almost want to take the towel and kind of scrub a little bit, if you will.
Right.
Yeah, okay. we all took baths almost immediately as soon as we got back out of the water. We're like, okay, then the shower. But okay, thank you, ladies. Have a great day.
You as well. Yeah.
Thanks, Paul. I learned that little scrubbing trick only after someone convinced me to put Crisco all over my body before I went in the lake. So probably just as good. We'll get back to the I'm a Doctor show in just a moment here on KFGO. If you have any questions right now, you can call in 237-5948, 800-880-5346, or send us a text at 35270. Dr. Jennifer Jones-Dees and Dr. Jessica Kuhn are with us here until 1:30 on KFGO. It is the I'm a Doctor show with Dr. Jennifer Jones-Dees and nurse practitioner Dr. Jessica Kuhn. If you have any questions, you can call in 237-5948. Text in to 35270. This is a good question. And I think, if I remember right, one of you likes to talk bladder issues and bowel problems. So this is a question I'm sure you guys get a lot. When should you be concerned about your child's constipation?
That's a great question. And you're right. We do hear concerns with bowel and bladder issues quite often, and constipation being one of the biggest problems that we hear. And so constipation, really, for people who don't or who aren't aware, children should be having regular daily bowel movements. When they come into my office, we oftentimes get a little graphic and talking about what their bowel movements look like and how often they're going, which kids either think is really funny or they're a little embarrassed by. But as I tell them, that's part of your body, and we always have to talk about your whole body when you come in to see me. And so that question is a great question. I would say if your child is not having regular daily bowel movements and they're starting to complain of stomach aches, or they're more sleepy, not wanting to do as much as usual, those are concerns. The other concerns would be if their appetite starts decreasing and they're not having regular daily bowel movements, or if when they have bowel movements, they're having little for lack of better term, streaks in their underwear. Those are concerns that we might be having as well. Anytime a child is having incontinence with bowel, that is a big concern, or bladder incontinence, which hasn't been present before, those would be times that we would want to talk about constipation a little bit more and or dig into the root of the problem or come up with some solutions to that problem.
My kid is very active and impulsive. How do I know the difference between a kid just being a kid and ADHD?
That's a fantastic question. And I think we deal with this probably daily in the pediatric world. Kids in general are active and they also are excited. And so they can be perceived as hyper. To really have a problem, we need to be seeing those symptoms in several different situations in their life. For example, it needs to happen at school and it needs to happen at home. So red flags would be, it's only happening in the daycare environment and the parents aren't seeing any issues. You know, what's going on at the daycare? Is the provider, do they not have a firm enough discipline plan set up at the daycare, or, you know, different things like that. A lot of parents get information from the teachers, like, well, he won't sit still in his desk and he's doing all of this. And so I need you to go have him tested for ADHD. And then, you know, I sit down with family and that's not something that's happening at home. And so it really needs to be a good interview with the family. What scenarios are these kinds of things showing up in? And then the other important thing to remember is every child that is between about 4 and 8 has a very active lifestyle and can be at times perceived as hyper, but that doesn't mean that they have a learning problem that's related to hyperactivity or attention deficit. All the kids during that developmental stage are learning how to create their own boundaries, what's appropriate and what's not. Can I put my face right up to my friend Jessie's face and talk to her that way? Nope, you learn your boundaries. You got to back off a little bit. And so every kid matures at a little bit different rate there. And so sometimes just taking the time to go through those scenarios with the parents too, because sometimes just a little behavioral modification therapy is all the kiddo needs. They're just slower to develop when they're, you know, getting those boundaries set up.
Great information. If you have a question, we've got another half hour of the IMA Doctor Show. Dr. Jennifer Jones-Dees and nurse practitioner Dr. Jessica Kuhn are here from IMA Healthcare. If you missed it, they have launched a pediatric and adolescent medicine practice at IMA Healthcare, and we are excited to have them here. Text in now to 35270. Call 237-5948. This is KFGO Fargo, K231CV Fargo. CBS News is next.
It's time for the IMA doctors to take house calls. Call now, 237-5948 or 800-880-5346, where you get answers to any healthcare question.
It is the IMA Doctor Show today here on KFGO, and it takes two. JJ Gordon is away. Eric Johnson is sitting in his spot. Today we have Dr. Jennifer Jones-Dees and nurse practitioner Dr. Jessica Kuhn with us. And we are talking kids. They have launched a pediatric and adolescent medicine practice at IMA Healthcare, and we're taking all of your questions. This is an interesting question into our text club talking about peanut allergies. When should I be concerned that my child has a peanut allergy? I have heard that it doesn't happen in the first few times that you give them peanuts. How do I know what to do and how to approach this?
That's a great question. And obviously, a question that we hear more and more often. Typically, the new recommendation is to, if there is no family history of extreme allergies or eczema in the child, the recommendation is to introduce those higher allergy foods like eggs, strawberries, peanuts, or peanut butter at an earlier age. So typically before age one, closer to 8 to 9 months is the recommendation, sometimes even closer to 6 months. For allergy symptoms, typically it isn't always in the first time a child has one of those foods. It may be in the second or third time. Most often you will see some sort of a reaction, upset stomach, vomiting, rash to the face or to the body. Typically you'll see pretty telltale signs that there is a concern. And it is very often a familial thing. So it very often runs in the family that another child or the parents themselves have one or more food allergies.
You know, I was just talking to someone about this the other day, and they said, how do you know if you're, doesn't it kind of scare you that we all just walk around and we could be allergic to something? We could be allergic to bee stings. And what do we do if we're out there and we get a bee sting? What is your advice to parents, you know, not knowing all the time what kids could be allergic to?
So typically, for myself as a mom, I often carry Benadryl with me. So I always have one of those little first aid kits where we have the fun, colorful Band-Aids, and then Tylenol or ibuprofen, as well as Benadryl, I typically carry with me. Zyrtec is also another great option, but some sort of antihistamine is not a bad idea to have with you or around, easy access to, so that if you were to have a reaction for yourself or for your children, that you had something that you could use to help with that reaction until you were able to get somewhere, like the emergency room or urgent care.
Sure. Let's get to the phone lines. LaVon, go ahead. You're on with the doctors.
Yes. I used to work at the state hospital, and I noticed all the adults, they're so concerned about the kids going back to school. But I don't hear much on the radio about how this is going to affect these kids. Like, they lose sleep, and they can't concentrate on their homework in school because they're so worried about making their friends sick. They can't sit at the same table, or they got to stay away from them. And so I was wondering if you have some hints about concerns that parents should be interested in and think about, like these masks now. That seems to be a big thing with everybody. Well, if children were talked to about masks, like as if it's a Halloween mask, and maybe show some pictures of them when they were in their costumes and that, and make it be light instead of so serious.
Sure. Okay, LaVon, thanks for the question.
So there is a lot of angst with bringing children, especially large populations, back together and then the subsequent spread. On the flip side, the pediatricians have been looking at the opposite effects of how children are exposed to viruses, what happens to them when they are sick, and COVID is not the exception to the rule. For the most part, is a lot of the children are much less symptomatic than the adults or anybody that has a secondary medical diagnosis or complication. And so, I think the hardest part about COVID and how to decide on who's going back and who's staying home is that it's not going to be a single answer. So we do, as adults, we need to embrace what the schools are doing to put plans in place. If I have a child that has a heart condition that puts them at risk, or a child with some other kind of immunity problem, I may be one of those families that is going to either consider the hybrid or the stay-at-home plan. Families that have healthy and well children can probably flex into the I'm going to go to school plan. On top of that, just as we talked about in the last half hour, we need to be conscious as parents as we're putting our kids back into schools. If our child has a fever, we do have this issue going on. And so we really need to be respectful to all the other children that are going to school about not sending our kids to school sick. So that's a difficult thing. And how do you put action plans in place for the schools and the daycares for that type of a setup? We do know parents need to get back to work. We also know that kids did not do well with all online schooling. They need that social interaction. They need their teachers. Teachers are professionals that, you know, have taken children to a whole other level as far as they're growing our next generation. And so we need our kids to have their teachers too. And so there's all kinds of other things that we're talking about in the pediatric world about reentry plans, but those are the big points that have been most expressed so far.
And I think being open and honest with your kids. So I think LaVon's question somewhat revolved around too, how do we explain this to our kids? And honestly, having open conversation with them about what does it look like to go back to school? Who's going to be in the school? How is the reentry process looking for different schools and different areas? And why is it that way? Most kids have a pretty good understanding, and I think just open communication, answer the questions that they're asking, and be very open and honest with them.
You know, what's interesting, ladies, is from my observation, just dealing with a three-year-old, I was really scared at the beginning of this pandemic that he would be sort of frightened by masks, or masks would be a scary or strange thing for him. And in fact, he adapted much better than a lot of adults, I think. I mean, he's just, oh, we wear masks? Okay, where's my mask? I need my mask. He screams at me now if we're even in a drive-thru and I don't have my mask on. He's like, Mom, put your mask on. And so I found that there are a lot of kids who just adapt very well. When you just say, oh, this is what we're going to do, they go with it, and this is what we're going to do, and they're not really as bothered by it as you would assume, as long as you're just open and honest and you make it not a big deal. From my experience, it was actually a lot easier than I intended it to be. I don't know, what's your guys' experience been like?
I think that last comment that you said, if I'm relaxed about it, he's relaxed about it, really resonates, because with children, they will pick up on your underlying anxiety. And so if you're nervous or anxious around other people and around wearing a mask, they will pick up on that, and they will have the same feelings towards that. In our office, we were somewhat worried about that too. I would say wearing masks in the exam rooms, kids typically aren't exposed to us wearing masks. And so now this is a whole new ball game for us as well, mostly for the younger kids. I feel like the older school age kids are really quite aware of why we're wearing them and what we're doing. But the younger kids do pick up on that. And honestly, we haven't seen much of a change with kids and wearing masks in front of them. And the biggest thing is, like I said, being honest, being nonchalant, and hiding your anxiety if you do have some anxiety around it, because they will feed off of that or pick up on that quite easily.
Now we just see a lot of doctors, a lot. Everyone who wears masks is a doctor, according to him. Dr. Jennifer Jones-Dees and nurse practitioner Dr. Jessica Kuhner with us from IMA Healthcare. We'll continue to take your questions when we come back. It is the IMA Doctor Show. Dr. Jennifer Jones-Dees and nurse practitioner Dr. Jessica Kuhner with us. If you haven't heard, they've recently launched a pediatric and adolescent medicine practice at IMA Healthcare. And if you would like to know more about it, you can always give them a call at 280-2033, imahealthcare.com. This is an interesting question. How do I know when I should test my child for outdoor allergies?
Probably the short answer to that question is how long have they had their symptoms, and what are the symptoms that they're having? A lot of parents perceive that we just test for allergies, and the reality is that's not an entirely true statement. If children can do well on over-the-counter antihistamines like Zyrtec, Claritin, Benadryl, potentially some nasal sprays, they don't necessarily need to have true allergy testing, and it's quite a cumbersome thing to have a child go through when we do those. So the short answer would be, how symptomatic are they? Are they able to get relief with simple over-the-counter medications? And if not, then they need to see their provider for further suggestions.
This question is, my son has had 3 ear infections. He's only 6 months old. How do I know if there's a bigger problem or if he needs tubes?
So there's criteria for ear tubes that are put in place. And a lot of parents worry, he's had 6 ear infections, so we need to go have tubes. What we look at in the peds world is, how long have they had fluid behind their ears that's not draining properly and potentially putting them at risk for speech, language, and developmental concerns because they're not hearing right, or they're just chronically ill because their ears aren't draining well. It should be a discussion between the parents and the provider, but the kind of cut and dry answer is, if there's been fluid for longer than 3 months, tubes need to be considered.
This is another text in at 35270. My child randomly says he has a stomach ache. I've tried to determine what the triggers are. It seems that it's frequently in the car. Is it possible it's motion sickness, car sickness, or is he just saying it? He's forward facing now in the car seat. Anything I can do or give him? My husband claims it's my driving, but I disagree.
So that's a great question. And oftentimes we are seeing some motion sickness in the cars, especially in the bigger SUV type vehicles where kids are more towards the back. You can see, or in bus rides, kids will get some of the car sickness or seasickness. And so the first thing that I typically suggest is something really easy. There are some bands that push on pressure points. Yes, yeah. C-bands. And so that's one of the first things I'll recommend. They typically work quite well, and then we're not putting something orally or systemically into the child. So something easy that they can slip on. They need to wear them on both wrists, and typically I suggest they put them on both wrists before they get into the car, and they don't take them off until they're out of the car. Because when you take those C-bands off, it releases the pressure from those pressure points, and very often the car sickness or seasickness will come back if you're still in the car. But that is probably one of the easiest, simplest things you can do, and seems to work quite often.
That's really good advice. Now, if I remember right, you place two fingers on your wrist. It explains when you buy the C-bands where to put them, but I would imagine you use the child's fingers to determine where it should go on their wrist, right?
Exactly. Okay. And there are children's versions of the C-band. So you definitely wouldn't want to use an adult band because it will be too loose. And you do need some pretty significant pressure on those pressure points. Some parents will tell me that when they take the C-bands off, you can see little marks where those pressure points, where it was pushing on those pressure points, typically isn't uncomfortable for the child, but it does need to be a correct fit.
Sure. That makes sense. Hope that answers your question, and maybe if you just try that, it'll work. At what age should I worry about my child not speaking? I have a 2.5-year-old who is hardly speaking. He says maybe 3.5 words, cries and throws tantrums when he's frustrated, won't speak to anyone else or repeat words. When should I be concerned?
Right now. We start talking with parents about social skill development very early on. The children start their first forms of speaking to us way back at 6 months of age. At that point in time, it's a lot of just vocalizations and not necessarily words. By the time they reach a year, they should have at least one word that they're saying consistently. It doesn't need to be perfect as far as how it comes out, but maybe saying ma or dad or a pet's name or something along those lines. And then as we traverse through that second year of life, there's definitely milestones for children to have with regards to word development. For example, by 15 months, most children should be saying around 5 words. By 18 months, that's going to increase even further. And some children might even be starting to link words at 18 months, but they should be linking words like saying thank you or all done or mommy up by the time they hit the 2-year mark, and then progressing from there. So if your child is over 2 and not speaking, that would be something that I would get in to see your provider quickly for, because there's some things that we would definitely need to investigate as to why the child is not speaking.
Dr. Jennifer Jones-Dees and nurse practitioner Dr. Jessica Kuhn, thanks so much for being with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you want to get a hold of them, they're located on 45th Street and 32nd Avenue South, just right across from Mexican Village. You can also see them online, imahealthcare.com. You can give them a call, 701-280-2033. IMA Healthcare is focused on whole person preventative and specialized medical care. Instead of simply treating a symptom, they'll work to find the source of that symptom and what it means to your overall health. And now, of course, with the addition of Dr. Jennifer Jones-Dees and Dr. Jessica Kuhn, now they have launched a pediatric and adolescent medicine practice at IMA Healthcare. Stay tuned to KFGO and join us again on August 17th for the next IMA Doctors Show.
News Radio, KFGO.